Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for March 30th, 2015. I'm Faith Miller. Breaking news now on the UC Berkeley student who went missing over the weekend. Eloy Vasquez was last seen at a party at USC. It was just confirmed that Vasquez was found dead. Rachel Scott joins us live in the studio with the latest details.
Yes, Eloy Vasquez was found dead. LAPD has confirmed that today. He was last seen, as you said, outside of the Teak House near 28th Street, where he was attending a party. At that time, he went to go take a walk outside, friends say, and he eventually wandered onto the 10 freeway eastbound and was hit by an oncoming car going about 60 miles per hour. CHP does tell us that the driver attempted to stop but just couldn't. He ended up hitting Vasquez, who then died on the scene. CHP does say that that on-ramp is really easy to access for pedestrians. But they say that at this time, that's all they know. And as we have said before, Vasquez was fatally struck.
Thank you, Rachel. The Expo Line is now up and running again after an accident derailed the train Saturday. 21 people were left injured, and the trains were derailed when it collided with a vehicle that turned onto the train's tracks. Despite being on board when the accident occurred, Tim Bovard says he still feels safe riding the Metro.
I think it's still safe. It's safer than being commuting on the freeways, which I did for years, and I'm happy to have Metro.
Metro official Mark Littman says that Metro is doing everything they can to keep the Metrolink safe, but asks others to do the same.
Do your part as well. The trains can't stop on a dime. Look out for trains and pay attention to the laws.
An Anti-Defamation League study found 2014 had many more anti-Semitic incidents than the year before. There was a 21% increase in overall incidents in California and the United States. This is the first time in nearly 10 years that the number of assaults and threats has gone up. The ADL's Amanda Suskind says the increase is probably linked to anti-Israel sentiments because of the war in the Gaza Strip.
We do see a disturbing number of really vicious attacks that result from people having very strong feelings about Israel and then extrapolating their feelings to all Jews worldwide.
The yearly study looks into assaults, vandalism, and harassment, but Suskind says it does not collect figures on anti-Semitic incidents made online.
With the internet, you get comment sections. It doesn't take very long when you're talking about anything affecting the Jewish community or Israel in general for those comments to devolve into anti-Semitic rants. I mean, two or three generations in, you're going to start to see hate speech.
Suskind says the ADL is working on a way to quantify anti-Semitism on the internet for future reports. A man charged with carving his name into his girlfriend's chest pleaded not guilty in a Santa Ana court today. In addition to the razor blade offense, Sergio Mendoza is accused of domestic battery and kidnapping. Mendoza allegedly punched his girlfriend, forced her into his car for several hours, and threatened her with violence. Mendoza is in custody on $100,000 bail, and a pretrial hearing is scheduled for April 8th. The Sachs Institute held a spring symposium today to discuss mental health on college campuses. Professors from all over the country held seminars to help students prepare for the future and manage their stress at the same time. Sachs Institute founder Ellen Sachs says students' well-being is a key part to being successful in college.
Students being healthy is important for them to be able to thrive in school, to learn, to make progress, to make friends, to work.
This renewed focus on student mental health was praised by USC Director of Counseling Services Eileen Rosenstein.
Universities across the nation are recognizing it's not just enough to train our students academically, but we really have to develop the full person. And at USC, that's always been a part of our mission.
A national survey released recently by UCLA shows emotional health among college freshmen is at its worst since 1985. An L.A. seafood company was ordered to cease operations today for bacteria found in its facilities. According to the U.S. Department of Justice, L.A. Star Seafood has been violating FDA regulations for years, consistently processing its products in an unsanitary manner. The found bacteria is linked to listeriosis, a disease associated with fever, muscle aches, and in rare cases, death. A 280-pound emerald is at the center of an international ownership brawl. The Brazilian government appeared in court downtown today to try to bring the Bahia emerald home. Martha Daniel reports.
When it was hauled from the mines of northeastern Brazil in 2001, the massive gem known as the Bahia emerald was the largest of its kind in the world. Ever since, it's been the center of an international saga with countless legal and extra-legal twists and turns. The gem has passed through numerous hands, traveling from Brazil to Southern California to New Orleans, where it spent a year trapped underground after Hurricane Katrina, and finally to Los Angeles. Now, Brazil is fighting to get the emerald back after its 14-year sojourn around the world. It all started with a Silicon Valley investment gone wrong.
It's kind of a long story.
That's Steve Haney, a lawyer representing a Sacramento real estate investor involved in the current court case.
2009, there was about six different lawsuits filed by different people claiming to be the owner of the Bahia Emerald, and we're now down to the final two parties.
Brazil claims the emerald is a national treasure, and that because of its cultural significance, it should be returned to its homeland. But Haney says the two remaining claimants made some compelling arguments to continue the court proceedings in Los Angeles. The question now is, who really paid for this thing?
Where you start to get into the confusion as to which parties actually paid for it, because more than one party actually paid money for the same emerald.
Haney says the story of how the Brazilian emerald ended up at the center of a legal battle in Los Angeles is headed for Hollywood. A screenplay is in the works. A judge ruled today that the trial will continue in Los Angeles. The next court date is set tentatively for May 11th. Martha Daniel, Annenberg Radio News.
In the interest of full disclosure, Mr. Haney is the father of ARN staff producer Taylor Haney. The Daily Show officially has a new host. Comedy Central announced today that South African comedian Trevor Noah will take over the reins from Jon Stewart. We asked USC students what they think about the new host. Most were indifferent, but a few, like Brianna Kaufman, are excited about the new hire.
I feel like it is great to have more diversity behind the news desk because it could definitely bring an additional perspective, whether it's international or just a different perspective on domestic affairs.
The move comes just a few months after Noah was a guest on The Daily Show. Comedy Central says his international presence and following set him apart. All immigrants to this country face uncertainty. The one thing they can usually rely on is having an embassy or consulate. But some, like the Kurds, come from an ethnic homelands with no defined borders. Among them is Lukman Barwari. He's created his own informal embassy, one aimed at keeping his people connected and his culture alive. But Taylor Haney reports it's not always easy.
At Nuroj Kurdish Cuisine, people are leaving their tables and getting up to dance. The musicians have been playing all night. There are pastoral paintings hanging from the walls, and the kitchen is alive. The food served on copper trays, chickpea soup with semolina lamb dumplings, face-puckering Kurdish coffee. For dessert, fried goat cheese drizzled with honey.
This is more of a cultural center or more of an embassy for me to display a Kurdish culture.
If the restaurant's an embassy, Lukman Barwari is the ambassador. The Kurdish people don't have a real embassy because there is no Kurdistan. Kurds are spread through corners of Iraq, Iran, Syria, and Turkey. The people and their culture have endured war after war, and for some, that means coping with displacement.
Here we feel like we're not fully rooted in the system, or in the culture, or in the soil, because we were not born here.
Lukman came to the U.S. in the 70s as a teenager. His family fled political persecution in Iraq and ended up in North Dakota. Later, he moved to Los Angeles and worked in biotech for 18 years. And he was good at it, but one day he got laid off. He dropped his career and opened his restaurant. But he still has family in Iraq. Some of them are even fighting ISIS in the Kurdish Peshmerga. And even now, decades later, as he hosts parties at Nuroj, 12,000 miles away, his connections to his homeland can pull him away at any moment.
2 days ago, my cousin got killed by ISIS. Actually, I found out on Facebook he was fighting the ISIS forces. And my heart sunk when I saw his picture. I couldn't believe it. How do you celebrate where people are still being killed or fallen or become martyrs?
News like that might have drawn Luqman back to his family in Kurdistan, but he's tried going back before, and he found there was no going home again.
This 30 years of departure, it has created a void. I noticed that after going back to Kurdistan in 2001, that my childhood memories were all shattered.
Luqman was staying with his uncle in northern Iraq. They visited his childhood village on the border with Turkey and started looking for his old home.
The village that I grew up with, the village was divided into two parts by a beautiful river. And when I went back, there was no home, no trees, no sign of any buildings. The river was almost dry. It was not recognizable anymore. That was my first time going back there and never went back.
I asked Luqman what he does with his childhood memories, how he could recover from seeing his home in ruins.
Opening a place like this, listening to the Kurdish music, introducing my culture, my music to people is way of maintaining my culture. And the memories stay alive.
Victory celebrations in Kobani.
Luqman threw a party for the liberation of Kobani from ISIS.
I thought we'll just be overwhelmed and people would be happy standing out or sitting outside. We prepared for that.
But the restaurant was maybe three quarters full, and the energy in the room was low. Because elsewhere in America, people were watching TV. Luqman was obviously disturbed.
2:02 to play in Super Bowl 49. Can the Seahawks...
If you're a patriot, you care about your nation and freedom, then how do you equate that with the Super Bowl, right? I'm really disappointed at those people that did not turn out by just staying home and watching football.
This is what Luqman is facing. He's trying to bring together the Kurds of Los Angeles. He wants to maintain his culture. But fading memories of home and regular reminders of those still suffering make American life seem comfortable. Still, says Luqman, it's not home.
We don't know where we really belong. We're all in the air.
Taylor Haney, Annenberg Radio News.
If you've ever wondered about the origins of curious words and phrases, here's Andy Vasoyan with today's Root Source.
Ah, whiskey.
After your first sip, you'll know Tennessee whiskey.
Whiskey's a fiery golden beverage, and even if it goes down smooth, it has a bit of a reputation.
Easily get drunk by whiskey.
I know, maybe until midnight. After that, no, only blackouts.
The long history of whiskey stretches back to the 16th century. The word came from the Scottish phrase usgawaatha, which means water of life. Despite its Scotch origins, whiskey's a favorite drink all over America, to the point where people are writing songs about it. If you've drunk enough where you're calling somebody whiskey, though, it might just be time to put down the glass.
There were four new cases of sexual battery near USC's campus this weekend. Annenberg TV News spoke with the victims and has an update on the potential suspect tonight at 6 and at ATVN.org. That's it for today. We had help from Alana Bracken, Alex Duplessis, and Rania Niftos. Our board operator is Lexi McAvinci. Martha Daniels is the newscast producer, and the executive producer is Victor Figueroa. From all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Faith Miller.